Jack Arnold, Reel 4. You were just saying that the Turks were surrounded.
Yeah, well, the Youngs retreated and left the Turks in this exposed position. Oh, and then the Chinese just went round them and put a block on the road or the tracks or whatever it was, and that were it. Like they did with the Gloucesters later on after they were captured, but I don't know anything about that.
Did you see anything about of any other nationalities there, apart from British, Turks and Americans?
Oh, aye. There were Puerto Ricans in the camp. Do you want a bit of a... Just to break in. The Puerto Rican one day, they used to circumcise themselves. And I saw this bloke do it. They got like he wanted a trunk, a piece of... off the tree... what they put in front of their penis, and then they pull the foreskin over this part of the tree and just cut down with a razor blade and circumcised himself.
Was this one chap?
Oh, they were all doing it in there. But I did see a bloke doing it once, and then he packed it with mud from the river bank where they dropped all shit from the latrines in, and he were all right in a week or two.
What did he do that for?
I have no idea. They reckoned it probably like the Jew do, that it's cleaner to be circumcised. But I actually saw him do that. Yeah, there were Puerto Ricans, there were Canadians in the camp with us, there were one New Zealander out of the artillery, New Zealander artillery captured at the OP. Did I mention the Canadians? There were... I didn't see any French Canadians that were actually. One Belgian who played the guitar. And have I mentioned the one Dutchman? Or two Dutchmen? That were it. It was a proper United camp, nation camp, were they? But they came in after us. We were the first British in, but the camps had been established before us with lads who were, Yanks who had been captured in the November.
What did the Chinese try to indoctrinate you?
Oh,
politically?
Yeah.
Can you tell me about that?
The first thing that started on, more or less as soon as we got there, we had to sit on the hillside looking at the river, and it was cold and damp and dreary. And they were on about Taiwan mostly being an integral part of Great China. So we went, if you went along with them, you see. But the one Irishman there, even though the other blokes were saying, why don't you bloody say yes, it is, he didn't, he were as thick as two bloody planks for that bloke. And then they let us go back to his hut. And we must have been up there 3 bloody hours before he said, yes, it was. And that were it, all they wanted to know. But yes, they did. And I'll tell you this now, and I don't give a damn who listens to the tape. A lot of the things they told us were right.
Such as?
Well, about how wars were caused. I always thought wars were caused by them shooting off a prime minister, the Archduke of Nebuchadnezzar, like the First World War. But when they explained to it about fears of influence to put your goods in and to get stuff out from your colonies and all like that, then I got a different meaning of how wars do start for greed and stuff like that, yes. But they found out that some blokes would take it in and some blokes wouldn't. Some blokes didn't want to, other blokes would like to know a bit more. And they gradually let it drop. But you could learn, if you wanted, voluntary. And we had a library after, say, about 6 or 9 months. I mean, most of the books were Russian, but printed in English, like Jack London, or War and Peace.
Tolstoy.
That's it. And Elliot Ehrenberg, Have you heard of him? He was a Russian author. Damn good. I enjoyed reading his books.
And which book of Ilya Ehrenberg did you read?
The Ninth Wave, The Storm, isn't it? And funny enough, those books are in Keckley's library. Well, in Keckley Library and Edmund Library. When I came home, those books are in that library. Oh, another thing, what they interrogated about when we came back. Well, when they, what did you tell them? I said, I told them nothing. I said, well, didn't they want to? I said, they could tell us. I said, they had a dictionary with all abbreviations at the back, what says RURs, Royal Ulster Rifles. They were all RAC, Royal Army Service Corps. They'd only to look at that, and they knew. They weren't. Another one, when this lot were interrogating me in Japan, he left a map on the table. He must have thought, because I were only a private or a gunner, that I was so ignorant I couldn't read a map. Anyway, I had a good look at it. He reckoned to go somewhere, but I think he was watching me. But I didn't give a damn whether he was watching me or not. I got up and had a good look. And it was a map of the camp. And when he come back then, he started on about this map. And because I told him I could read that map and show him all the buildings and everything, he was amazed. He didn't think private soldiers could read a stinking map. That was the intelligence corps men.
Phew. What other books did you read in POW camp apart from Ilya Ehrenberg?
What they call it, Howard Fast.
What did you read of Howard Fast?
Spartacus, wasn't it? Spartacus, I forgot now. But I've read that in Edmund, well, it's been not talented, Spartacus. Soviet weeklies we used to get, Daily Worker we used to get. What was that Chinese paper, Shanghai News, I think it was. Shanghai News, I'm not quite sure now, one of them papers we got. Anything what came out like we used to read.
So the books you read, were they just novels, or did you read any political books?
Oh, aye. Most of them were not. Well, I mean, if you read the political book, they had one there, a good one, Political Economy by, I forgot his name, it was a Russian. And that was a book what anybody who has time to study, like we had there, would change a bloke. And I'm not bothered who reads this. I'm a socialist, always will be. And more so when Winnington, you know Alan Winnington, spoke to you. Now, we built a new cinema, concert hall, did the prisoner of war, voluntary, in that Pukdong. And Winnington came, and there'd be what? Between 1,000 and 1,500 troops there, British, American and what. And Winnington got on the stage, and he says, I'm Alan Winnington of the London Daily Worker. Well, there was such a howl went up, blackhead and traitor and God knows what, they were shouting and staring at him. And he let them all calm down, and he spoke to them men for about an hour and a half. And whatever he said on that platform, no one could disagree with him, because what he told them, everybody in that hall had known and experienced those things at home or in the war.
What type of things was it?
Well, everything about how your working class are in the cart and that. There's other people who have the money and all that, colonies, everything. And they cheered him off that stage when it finished.
Was he just speaking to a British audience?
British and American. And what he said, you couldn't. I'll tell you another thing and all, but this happened in Palestine. Actually, it's nothing to do with career in a sense. In another sense, it had. We used to get in the army in 1944, 45, 46, what they call APCA lectures, Army Bureau of Current Affairs. Usually be sergeants of the intelligence corps. And I was talking to one of these sergeants one day, and I went, nowhere near a communist in them days. I was a bit left, like, but nowhere near. I'm not a communist now, don't get me wrong. And this sergeant told us, he said that he gave these lectures and any questions, but if a man got up and asked a question what had a left wing or a communist tendency, straight away that sergeant had to finish off that APCA lecture and dismiss the class, because they were frightened out the bloody wits what these governments what we have of enlightening the troops. And I don't know if you know this or not, but pre-1939 war, when I was stationed in Woolwich in the depot of the Royal Artillery, and we went down into Speaker's Corner in London, or even in Woolwich where they used to have on a Sunday blokes abnobbling politics, we weren't allowed to stand and listen to them. Folks in uniform weren't allowed to listen to any political speech. Yeah. But getting back to Korea, I'm not a member of any political party, but my leanings are being a working class man to socialism.
Had you been a socialist before Korea?
Yes. I'd always been, what can I be, a working class man? You can't be anything else. These people who we have in the Labour Party today, Wilson and stuff like that, they're not socialists. Not in the sense of, I agree with nationalisation of everything, me. And what doesn't make a profit will get subsidised by other nationalised things what do make a profit.
But did you have those same opinions before Korea, or did Korea change your
opinion? Well, they enlightened me to a lot, but I had those opinions not to that great amount before our prisoner of war.
Coming back to Alan Winnington, did you speak to him personally?
Oh, yeah.
What about?
Well, not all this politics, just how folks, you know, things were on the outside world and stuff like that. Sometimes it were politics, so other times it weren't.
Did he often visit the camp?
No. I think I saw him about 3 times, that was all.
And did he lecture every time?
Oh, no, no.
So what was the purpose of his other visits when he didn't lecture?
He just came to see if you're going on all right, stuff like that. Through him, and to a greater extent, through Condren, that's where things improved in that camp. Such as, instance, Condren used to tell the Chinese what we liked. Like potatoes, the Chinkies would... thought we wouldn't like potatoes because they feed them to cattle and stuff like that. But Condren told him, no, we'd sooner have potatoes than rice. Same as green tea. Green tea is a luxury in England, isn't it? But the Chinese always have green tea. But I, British, prefer black. And they're quite surprised that the British wanted black tea instead of green tea. Stuff like that, Condren explained to them.
Did they have black tea to give you?
Oh, they gave us black tea eventually. We used to make coffee out of soya beans, burn the soya beans, brown them, and make coffee with that.
Was Andrew Condren an official spokesman for you then?
Yes, because he was voted into that position by all the men in the British company. Every company was voted for a spokesman to go in front of the Chinese, and Condren was the man that the British voted on.
Why did they choose him?
Because he was in... Condren's a very intelligent man, you know. And he could put his point over. I think Condren did a great deal for us when we were out there. I do.
Well, did you get any other visitors apart from Alan Winnington?
Oh, aye, with Monica Fulton. She was somewhat to do. And two lawyers. Hey, what did I call them? One were MP, I think.
Holden?
No. I've forgotten now his name. Solicitor. What was his name? He was well known in Britain.
Not D.N. Pritt?
Pritt, yeah. That was one of them. Monica Fulton, she came, and that Pritt.
What did Monica Felton do, or what impression did she make?
Well, not much, because actually she was a cripple, wasn't she? Yeah. Well, I don't know what to tell you this or not. Well, in the camp, there's a lot of homosexuality. I won't say a lot amongst the British. Funny enough, amongst the Chinese there were. And amongst the British are one or two and all. And the Yanks. And when Monica Felton came, I mean, I opened up his ears, this old shunt, with her being a cripple. Some of the Yanks passed a comment that no wonder the British were homosexual when the women were like Monica Felton. It's a rotten thing to say, but that was a remark what was passed.
Was there more homosexuality amongst the British then?
Oh, there were some, yeah.
I mean, did the Americans think there was more homosexuality amongst the British?
Well, they used to talk about it. See, amongst one or two of the IORs, I'm not mentioning their names, old regular soldiers in Colchester, there must have been a, what we call a bum boys club. And this one or two of them, and these bum boys in Colchester must have plenty of money. And they were all just talking about it. There were more talk than activity, I think. And the Yanks got a wrong impression of a lot of things. And that's what they were on about with Monica Felton.
You noticed homosexuality amongst the Chinese, did you?
Oh, aye, they used to walk hand in hand. And arms round one another. And one of the Chinese officers had one of the coloured lads. I used to say, walking hand in hand down the river. Parasol up in the air.
You mean one of the American GIs?
Aye, a coloured one.
So the homosexuality was amongst the Chinese troops, you mean?
Oh, now I don't know about that. I'm only talking about what I've seen in the camp. Don't get wrong impression in this respect. I'm talking about what I saw with my own eyes in that camp.
When you say Chinese, do you mean Chinese POWs?
No. Chinese officers and soldiers in the camp. One or two, I don't say. They'd be same as in the English army, this it today, or any other army, or in prison, where it's all men together.
And what about D.N. Pritt? What kind of an impression did he make?
Tell you honest truth, I can't remember. But it was all on when the peace treaty was on and the prisoner of war relief. Now, coming back, I can't really remember. But coming back to the first year, and food was getting better during the late summer. And the peace talk started at Panmunjom. I honestly believe, and the Chinese believe too, that the war, they told us that we'd be on our way home before Christmas, the Chinks told us that. And the frozen meat, what they brought across the river, they used to bury about 6 foot deep. They dug these shelters and put this meat in, and it was like fridges. Christmas of 51, just before, they opened these caches, or whatever you call them, of meat, and with as much pork as we wanted, besides vegetables, chocolates, sweets, soju, which was sake, soju, pork buns, you could go down into the village and walk about, and I honestly believe, and they believed that we'd be off home before Christmas at 51 till the Americans put in that voluntary repatriation. And after that, that were it.
You mean with the Chinese POWs they were holding?
Yeah. And the North Koreans, they put that clause in, voluntary repatriation, and that stopped the peace talks going on. Quite a few months, didn't it? Oh, I must tell you about the Turks and all. The Turks, They used to have bartering with the Korean civvies. And the Techs knew where all the marijuana were grown. And every time you went, I used to go over often to the Techs. They used to get into a room about as large as this, about 12 foot by 12 foot, something like that. Stuff all the windows and the doors up and get these marijuana cigarettes going. And inhale it, put the caps over the face and blow into the caps and then re-inhale. And they all used to get drunk on this. I had a do at this marijuana, but I couldn't make out of it. And we had an Irish bloke there, an Englishman, who smoked it quite regular, who used to get canned, drunk as newts on this marijuana. One especially used to be laid on the hillside in the camp amongst the houses, all naked. And he used to have pretending to drop a bomb into a mortar tube. Bang! And one bloke, he came, and he was supposed to be General Custer, and he reckoned to be shot in his shoulder. And he honestly believed that he was shot in his shoulder, and that we had to bandage it up with an old lump of rag before he was satisfied when he'd been on this marijuana.
What would the Chinese do if they found you smoking marijuana?
Well, they didn't. They knew, I think, but they didn't bother. They smoked it themselves. Before we started cooking for themselves, at the beginning of Phuc Dung, there were two old Chinese who used to cook for us, and they used to be on the opium with the pipes. And they used to, sometimes when you got hens, chickens and that, you could see them, they used to eat the feet of chickens and pick the brains out of heads.
Talking about visitors, did you come across an Australian called Wilfred Burchett?
I remember he did come once. But once, I think, only he came. I'll tell you a man who sticks in my mind. I forgot his name. He was a civilian who were captured all before us in the November. And he was the photographer for, is it Association Press? And he used to visit all the camps. And he still had his wind-up clockwork camera. What was his name? I forgot his name. And that's where a lot of photographs came from that chap. When we were released at Panmunjom, on the Chinese side, there were a table and there were loads and loads of photographs on what this lad had took. He was knocking on with this chap. And what in them days, 30-odd, he'd be well in his 40s, back end of his 40s. But all these photographs were all, and you could take whatever you wanted of these photographs. I'll show you some of them. But I sent a lot of them to the Ulster Rifles headquarters in Belfast because they were Irishmen, to their museum.
Quite a lot of controversy was raised in the Korean War over this germ warfare issue. What did you think to that?
Well, I didn't actually see it. But they showed us photographs of what was supposed to be it, and these delegates from other countries and nations who had been to see them. And there were Englishmen amongst them, weren't there? Two, I think. But also they brought the pilots to the camp where we were, who gave a confession and said they had dropped them. Now, whether they did or not, I don't know. I didn't see the results myself. Mind you, from what I've seen of the Yanks, and read about them especially on the Vietnam, it wouldn't surprise me in the least.
Did you feel convinced by it at the time or not?
I am convinced, yes, they did, by what I've read as well after. I'll tell you what the Chinese or the Koreans also told us. And when you weigh it up, it's feasible. There's books up there published in this country what many a Korean veteran is going to buy, and they're going to expect something, and they'll be shocked by what they read in that book. It's called Korea, the war before Vietnam. Now, the Chinese told us, why should the North Koreans invade the South when the South of Korea were a police state, and if they have a general election, the socialists would kick out Syngman Rhee and Korea would be reunited. Well, when you wait up, there's a lot to that point. They reckoned that it were the South Koreans who invaded the North, like they had a border incidents a few times before, but they beat them back before. But this time, instead of just beating them back, they went straight under the North Koreans. So who do you believe? The United Nations say that it were the North who invaded the South, but the North Koreans and the Chinese said it was started by the South Koreans invading the North. Now, according to that book up there also, when the fighting were more or less finished and they were drawing up this line, Syngman Rhee had two divisions, attacked the North Korean lines to try and get a bit more. And they got the biggest shock of their life because the Chinkies shoved them back about 30 or 40 miles and readjusted the line a lot further south than what it should have been. So who do you believe? One side says one thing, one side says the other.
Who do you believe now?
Myself, personally speaking, I may have red-coloured glasses on. I believe the North Koreans and the Chinese.
That they started it?
That the South Koreans started it, that Syngman Rhee lot started it. Like the Vietnamese Dutch. Backed by the Yanks.
Now, is there anything about your POW captivity that we should mention that hasn't already been said?
No. We had a rough time and we had a good time in it. You forget the bad times and you remember the good.
What was good about it?
Well, not really. The comradeship between the blokes. You learnt a lot of things from that. You learnt about different cultures of Americans and Puerto Ricans, the hatred between the black and white Yanks. But when things were bad at the very beginning for the first 6 months in that camp, the hatred was still there between the black and white Yanks, but the white Yanks were there leaning on the black man, because the black man face life a lot better, although some of them wouldn't eat the food either. But the black Yanks came through the ordeal of camp life a lot better and physically than the white Yanks.
In what way?
Oh, in every way. When they had these so-called sports and that. See, the black man there, when he's on games, even today, he's not only running for his country, is running for his race to prove that the black is equal, or if not better, than the white. And that's happened in that camp too.